This is The State We're In. I'm Jonathan Guibert with a special edition of the show about being gay in Africa. And I'm joined by Scott Long from Human Rights Watch in New York and Ian Swartz, who's a gay rights activist who grew up in Namibia and now lives in South Africa. And we're hearing a lot at the moment from opponents of gay rights who state that homosexuality is simply not African, period. Here's a clip from an Anglican bishop in Cameroon.
It is condemnable, and I agree with that. It is horrible for us in our African tradition. Not only is it, but it is horrible.
Well, Ian, you're African. What do you make of what the bishop said there?
Well, I do think that as Africans, we do tend to be very selective in how we perceive our cultures and our moralities, etc. And people do sometimes tend to want to look at it as this big monolithic block, something that you can't change. And, you know, it's set like that. It's been like that for a million years and it is never going to change. And of course, that is completely untrue. When you look in different African settings, that culture is so diverse and how people define themselves and their culture is so diverse that I think talking about the African culture has also just become another convenient way in which we can dismiss everything that we don't like.
Scott, what do you think of what the bishop there said?
The purpose of this rhetoric and the purpose of these moral panics is to divide societies and to demonize certain people, to cast them out by saying they're not part of the constellation of African values at all. And what we need to remember is that politically, individually, and also in terms of public health, this demonizing of people has a devastating effect. I mean, it destroys people's lives.
Well, let's talk about just how deep the roots of anti-gay sentiment in Africa go. And I'm going to play a clip for you now from a gay man called Alexander, and he lives in Zimbabwe. And he's talking about what would happen if he ever came out to his family.
In my society, people believe that a gay person is so bad that they even deserve to die. And maybe if a homosexual gay person died, they'll say, it's good for him, it serves him right. After all, he was quite an embarrassment to us or something of that sort. If I personally, as an individual, came out to my family, they'll go on to say, look at this young man who's had an evil spirit cast upon him. They want to run around with me across to the witch doctor, and the witch doctor says an aunt who lives across the river bewitched your son, you've got to give him this concoction. And as they cook their food, they're trying to put herbs in their food, maybe trying to help. The way African people fear evil spirits and evil spells makes them think that a homosexual person is a person who's got a demon or something of that sort.
Well, Ian, Scott, have you yourselves ever seen people treated this way in front of you? Let's start with you, Ian.
I once went with an amazing Zimbabwean woman to the village that she was from, and this was going to be the first time that she was going to see her mother. Her father had died many years before, but the mother, after she had come out publicly to say that she was lesbian, and she had done so being on radio and a few other places, and her life had changed very, very dramatically and for the worse. And so we arrive in this little village of theirs. It's, you know, night is beginning to fall, and so we think that we entering this village are under the cover of darkness. And I've never seen such a huge crowd assembled so quickly, just people pouring out of the dark, and people that were not just really aggressive with her, but at some point they actually started throwing stones at her. And I found this incredibly scary. And I just thought to myself, how on earth are we going to get out of here? And for us, it was a lucky escape when we decided to turn around and move away.
Well, of course, divisions in families and community homophobia don't just happen in Africa. I think it is important to stress that. I'm a gay man. I'm from the United States. And, you know, my father, who died last year, essentially didn't speak to me for the last 20 years of his life after I came out. It can happen in many places. But I remember many times seeing people in Africa who, because they were out, were really struggling for their lives every day. I remember visiting the first little gay organization and so-called safe house that was set up in Bulawayo, the second city in Zimbabwe. And, you know, it was in a high-density area on the edges of town. And as we walked to it during the day, every day, these kids would throw stones at us from across the street.
Because they knew that it was a gay safe house?
They knew that it was a gay safe house, and it wasn't safe. Many people have been driven into despair. Many people have lost their lives in one way or another to the forces of homophobia.
Ian, you actually were born and raised in Africa and Namibia. Have you ever been treated as a pariah?
I've had a few bad experiences myself, nothing to the point where people were about to stone me. But I want to tell you about visiting a little town on the west coast in Namibia. I did so with my partner at the time. We're sitting in this lovely restaurant and we became aware of the fact that there was sort of this really bulky person who was moving up and down in front of the window that looked out onto the road. And this was shortly after I had made a few appearances on TV, so people knew my face. It was bitterly cold outside, so we enjoy our meal as much as we can, knowing this person is outside and not going away. And eventually we just
have to... being clearly menacing towards you, or...?
We got the looks, but, you know, it was little more than that. So eventually we have to, you know, you can't sit in a restaurant all of the night, so eventually we have to go out. And so the moment we get to the door, he absolutely storms at us and he says, you know, I've been standing here for hours just to tell you that all I want to do is to smash in your face. But I also need to tell you that just one day, just doing shopping, you know, the normal thing that everyone does, you're in a shop, you're sort of packing things into your trolley. And there's a woman with a fairly tiny baby in her trolley, just as hard as she could, rammed into me and said to me that we really do not need your type here. You really should leave. You know, you're a menace to society. And that went on for quite a bit. And you can imagine you're standing in a shop. And so everybody, of course, you get everyone's attention. Not only was it sort of really scary, it was also in many ways very embarrassing. For that moment, she would not think of a child's safety first. You can imagine the kind of emotion that she was experiencing.
Well, what did you say to her?
Well, I was very calm. And I said to her, you know, I'm very sorry that you feel that way, but, you know, I'm Namibian too. I'm entitled to be here. I'm not going anywhere. And you must realize that because you are, people know who you are and they know what you are, you might not have anyone come to assist if anyone should decide to attack you. So sometimes you need to back off from a situation and try and address it in some other way. A positive end to the story is that we went back to the store many months later and said to them, you know, this was completely unacceptable. Somebody from the shop should have come to assist, etc. We ended up doing a workshop with the people in this particular shop, but also at some point they did put up a plaque saying that, you know, all patrons are welcome, including people that are disabled and people that are blind and blah, 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 and gay people. It didn't last very long, but it was up there for a while.
Oh, how did you feel when you saw that sign?
I felt very good. I mean, especially because at that particular point, there were many businesses, clubs, etc., that were putting up these signs all across the city. It was important for us to have businesses indicate that they were going to protect their gay patrons, because we felt that that was one area that we could perhaps discuss, because people understood the language of money.
So this is the power of the pink rand.
Absolutely.
This is a special edition of The State We're In, about being gay in Africa. I'm Jonathan Gruber, and as we've been hearing, there's a lot of anti-gay legislation and feeling throughout Africa at the moment. And then there's Lorenzo's story. Lorenzo is a young man in his early 20s from Cameroon, and one day he met another man, and, well, they clicked.
Bon, c'est pas, je sais pas, je me rappelle plus la date, mais...
I don't remember the exact date that all of this happened. I met a young man who was called Yannick, and we went to this disco where we had a few drinks and a lot of fun. But the next morning, I went to my beauty salon because I'm a hairdresser. He came and he said he wanted to be with me. So we went out to find a flat together. And we found this place where we discussed the rent with the landlady, and it was about 53,000 francs a month. That's around 80 euros.
Lorenzo was excited to have found someone he really liked and who wanted to share his life with him. His joy was short-lived.
I was surprised the following day when Yannick's brother-in-law came to my beauty salon together with two policemen, and they said, "Are you Lorenzo?" And I answered, "Yes, I am."
J'ai dit, "C'est moi." Bon,
and they asked me if I knew Yannick.
Connaissais certain Yannick.
Then they accused me of hiding him in my place, and they started threatening me verbally. So I called Yannick up, and he came over immediately. The police then just took him away.
Mardi, j'ouvre mon salon de coiffure. Ils viennent.
The next day, the police came back, with the landlady this time, and they said, "We've come back to arrest you for abusing minors and homosexuality." I was flabbergasted. I didn't know what to do. And then they jailed me.
There was no trial, but Lorenzo was jailed for 7 months. Six others got the same sentence.
We didn't know each other beforehand, but we got to know each other in prison. We see each other from time to time now because unity is strength. They're my friends, so I can't turn my back on them, and they can't forsake me either. They're like family to me because we lived through the same experiences for 7 months. It was really hard. We were tortured, we were insulted and threatened, and they tried to rape us. It was really hard for us. We couldn't leave our cell to get some fresh air because we were afraid that the bad guys inside would just hurt us. They treated us as if we were different. Some of the guards made fun of us, and we often had to go to the prison director's office to try to resolve the problems, but they thought because we were gay, we didn't have a right to live, and that we deserved to go to hell.
C'est l'enfer qui nous mérite. Oui, oui. Quelqu'un prisonnier comme
and when
nous,
the prisoners saw us in the courtyard, even if we didn't say anything, they would say that we'd attack them verbally, and they would threaten us, they'd call us women, ugly women, that type of thing. And they were constantly calling us faggots. They said, we shouldn't go out. They said, you've got to stay in your cell. They hit us and they threw water on us. Really, we couldn't leave our cell, so we were in a prison within a prison.
La prison dans la prison. Oui, oui. Eh oui, c'est tout.
Lorenzo in Cameroon. Scott, are there a lot of gay people being charged and arrested and imprisoned throughout Africa?
All the signs are yes. In most countries, we don't know how many, and we don't know the scope of the arrests. I think what happened in Cameroon is very typical of this phenomenon, the kind of panics that have been happening all over Africa. In 2005, a Cameroonian newspaper started outing what it said were 55 prominent gays in government and business, and it seemed to be a politically motivated attempt to go after one ethnic group or members of that group. And it was a big scandal in the media, but it sent a message to local police officers across the country that a route to career advancement and getting their name in the papers was to go after the gays. And we have seen in Cameroon, Human Rights Watch is finishing a report on this now, we've seen repeated arrests of groups of gay men and lesbians and transgender people over the last 5 years, with the predictable effects in feeding public fears and prejudices, and also having a devastating effect on the national response to the HIV/AIDS pandemic.
So just to be sure that what we're talking about here is not necessarily a perception, you have empirical evidence gathered throughout Africa that there is, in fact, an upswing in the persecution of homosexuals in Africa.
Yes, I think the level of violence and the level of persecution has risen in many places. It's clear.
Well, Ian, you're gay, you were born and raised, you live in Africa. Have you ever experienced things like this where you yourself have had to hide your sexuality for fear of persecution?
You know, Jonathan, I need to tell you about my meeting with, I think it was called the Secretary of State in Uganda once. I was sort of younger and out and proud, and I promised myself that I was never, ever going to get back into the closet ever again. And then I travel to Uganda and I meet this person who is the equivalent of the ombudsman in many other settings. So you would expect this person to be the protector of human rights and the one person that you could talk to. And I walk in while he's busy with a conversation, which he wasn't going to end just because I was in his office. And he was really talking very derogatory about his wife and his daughter and how they need to know their places. And I was sort of really wondering how I was going to broach the topic of homosexuality. He asked me, "Are you married?" And for that split second, I really had to think very carefully about outing myself in his presence, and I felt so incredibly threatened, and I didn't know basically whether I was going to end up being arrested right there in his office. So I had to say no. And then, of course, he asked me, why not? And I said, well, I suppose I just have not met the right person. And that was a bit of a shock to me. And I went back to Namibia thinking to myself, I want to believe, having followed that following my gut that day was the right thing. There weren't many people who knew where I was going to, and I just didn't feel comfortable. And I feel, you know, just talking about it, I find it so incredibly traumatic.
Ian, what about at the time when you were starting your Rainbow Project? Now, when you were first getting that on the ground in Namibia, I mean, you were doing that for a specific reason, I guess. That's very
right. When Sam Nujoma was really making these horrible statements, I just could not see him is getting away with it, and nobody speaking out against it.
And this was the president of Namibia at the time?
This was the president of Namibia. There was, at that stage, the Minister of Home Affairs, who then called for the elimination of gays and lesbians, and it just went all over the place. It was beyond craziness for a while. So many people who could afford left the country, which I think was very scary.
But in the midst of all of this, you became an outspoken gay activist.
Well, I didn't really feel that I had much of a choice. And I think
it couldn't have been the safest choice.
It wasn't the safest choice, but sometimes that is not your consideration. Sometimes you need to think about a bigger picture. And to me, it was truly that. It was a country that I loved, a country which just, you know, that shortly before had gained its independence, a country that I felt could still go the right way. And it was going to be very important that people that were Namibian, that were not white, that could proudly identify as gay, that those people could speak up.
And was it dangerous for you to do that? I mean, did people threaten you?
Well, yes, there were many threats. I can remember the very first time the SWAPO Youth League, and SWAPO, of course, is the ruling party in Namibia, the SWAPO Youth League threatened to burn down the very newly established offices of the Rainbow Project, how we absolutely had to flee and weren't quite sure what it was that we were going to come back to. And my colleague Carol, you know, grabbing every piece of paper she could possibly find with everyone's name on it, because by then we had said to people, listen, we need to have your contact details, and we promise that we will guard these with our lives. And so when people were threatening to storm into our offices and burn everything, we had to every time grab the most sensitive information, which we kept together, which were people's contact details, their names, etc., and then flee with those. And that happened a couple of times. And there were, and because of that, I actually at some point decided to move. I decided to make the move to behind a higher wall with the electrical wiring, which is something that I never wanted to do. But it did make me feel a lot safer. But it also made me realize at times how much of an outcast I was in my own country.
Well, Ian, we have to leave it there for the moment, but you should definitely stay listening, because when the State Room returns in just a moment, we will be speaking with somebody who is, in fact, trying to make the best of being gay and living in Africa, and who tries to live as openly as possible. The State Room returns in just a moment. Stay with us.